Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back into the Keystone Kickoff Show. Quarter number three, coming to you from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white. Drink blue and light. Dustin Hockensmith and Greg Pickle here. We are moving away from recruiting a little bit. It's easy to talk about. It's hard to talk about at the same time if you're a Penn State fan, where Penn State is right now with a couple hiccups along the way in the 2020 recruiting class. But there was also a bit of non-recruiting news last week that I think is worth touching on. And especially when you take consider, you know, the assistant coaches were made available, and we didn't even get into this, Greg. But can you just walk us through? You're sitting there. What was it, Wednesday? And you're sitting there waiting for the assistants, mm-hmm. and how things played out right around Aaron Park's decommitment from the program.
It was definitely strange because James Franklin was there, and then he wasn't. And, you know, we eventually found out that that was a disappearing act because he went and, I assume, talked to Aaron Parks or talked to somebody about Aaron Parks decommitting. And then he came back out and held an impromptu press conference. So, yeah, it was certainly unique to see that kind of play out in real time. I don't know if Parks had been planning this for a long time and just decided that was the right time to pull the trigger. Or, again, like we talked about in the last segment, he could have maybe wanted to do this Sunday or Monday or even Tuesday. But if his edit wasn't done because whoever he had doing it couldn't get it ready, he might have delayed it. You just don't know. So yeah, it was interesting to then hear James Franklin say a few minutes after that he was still happy with where the recruiting class is at this point in time. And I think that, you know, the hard part for him and this Penn State football staff as a whole is, like we talked about, they can't get back on the field until the end of August. And I honestly think that, you know, if they come out and they're firing and they're winning games and having fun and Sean Clifford's a rock star, like I think a lot of people think he will be, they're going to be in good shape. And they will be just fine on the recruiting trail. If not, though, that's when, you know, things can get a little bit sticky. So they got to come out. They can't just win those first three games. They have to dominate them, in my opinion. And they're playing the right kind of opponents to do so.
There's questions to answer, without a doubt. And that's just where Penn State is. And we started to learn exactly what those things were that they had to answer. But I just thought it was interesting. Had you ever been in that position where that was unfolding?
No.
More or less right in front of your face?
No. I mean, we've seen commitments at camps before and maybe didn't know about it. We didn't realize what we were watching until after the fact.
Right.
You see some guys, his whole family comes over, they talk to Franklin, they hug. You know, Franklin might be a little bit more animated than normal, and you have an idea of what's going on. Yeah, so we've seen it the other way, but never the inverse. And, you know, I talked to a couple of coaches afterward during the assistant coach availability, just what it's like for a decommitment. And, you know, Matt Limegrover is pretty open about it, that, you know, you never get too high for a commitment or you don't get too low for a decommitment. And that's very cliche in football coach speak. But I do think there's some truth to the fact that, you know, now more than ever, if you don't, a commitment's great, but if you don't have a signed national letter of intent, what does it really mean? And there's some guys that you're never going to have to worry about. They're going to commit to you and keep their word from the time they commit until the time they sign. You know, Golden Achumba, Nick Dawkins, those are two good examples in this class of kids that aren't looking around, don't want to go anywhere else, don't want to take other visits, don't want to hear from coaches at other schools. They just want to sign with Penn State once they're allowed to by NCAA rule and be done with it. You still got to recruit them like they were guys that, they were uncommitted or unsigned. And, you know, again, there's different levels to it. Some guys might need more attention than others. A guy like Nick Dawkins, I don't really think you have to worry about him too much. But you still have to recruit him like he's an unsigned guy because he is. And then some guys, you know, on that scale, they need a little bit more attention.
I want to circle back to the assistants and what you learned from them, but I also wanted to start. I just wanted to get your take, and we texted about this briefly last week to see Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports put out a ranking of the Big Ten's best coaches with all this stuff going on, and for, you know, I think this is one of those times where James Franklin doubters are really basking in it right now. But to see him ranked number one in the Big Ten, what were your initial thoughts seeing a ranking of Big Ten coaches and having Franklin be the top one? Clearly, without Urban Meyer, there's some shuffling that needs to happen, but I was definitely surprised.
Yeah, I was too. It was, you know, I think we both went into that story looking to see if he fell, and where he'd be in relation to Ryan Day. And it turns out that he tops Ryan Day, who is way down that list. And, you know, based on production, yeah, I completely understand that. But, you know, if you think Ryan Day's the 12th best coach in the Big Ten, or whatever he was way down there. I don't know. I have a hard time buying it. I mean, obviously, he's only coached three games, but they were pretty darn successful three games to build on going into your first full-time job.
There are doubts, obviously. Anytime a guy's coaching for the first time, there are doubts. And there's definitely a dynamic here of who really deserves to be number one. There are issues I think you can take with every single coach. So Ryan Day, it seems like even just beyond that three-game sample size last year, it seems like there's a lot of excitement about his offensive ingenuity and bringing a fresh perspective to Ohio State. And I think you've seen that there hasn't been any type of falling off on the recruiting front. So I think he's done everything he possibly can. I mean, you know, it needs to be said that these lists are silly anyway. So let me just add that. But Mark D'Antonio is number two on the list. I think you can't find a Big Ten coach who's done more with less than him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, shouldn't he be held to a standard where he needs to start doing more with more? It's good. Like
he's a tough one for me always is. Because there's something to be said about endlessly getting lesser recruiting classes than other schools and turning them into, you know, some of the best teams in the Big Ten. Now, obviously, last year was a little bit different, but how is East Lansing different to recruit from Ann Arbor? You know, how much different is it to recruit to East Lansing than it is to Ann Arbor? Michigan's not held to the same standard as Michigan State. Actually, vice versa, Michigan State's not held to the same standard as Michigan. And I've never really been able to understand that, you know, Mike D'Antonio is beloved because he can get these, you know, non-heralded classes in and make them into, you know, contenders. And that's fine, but just like you said, at what point is that not enough? At what point do you actually have to go out and get big name kids, because you know it as well as I do that if you don't have a top 10 recruiting class year over year over year, you're probably not going to compete for college football playoff and national Big Ten and all that kind of stuff.
So with D'Antonio, who, I mean, frankly, coached circles around James Franklin the last 2 years, that Michigan State team over the past 2 years had no business being on the same field as Penn State, just talent for talent. But Mark D'Antonio won because he coached up his team and he got the absolute most out of him.
Yep.
So to see James Franklin ranked above Mark D'Antonio, okay. Jim Harbaugh was number three. Pat Fitzgerald was number four. Kirk Ferentz, Paul Chris, Scott Frost, Jeff Brom, PJ Fleck, Ryan Day at number 10. Lovie Smith at 11. Tom Allen from Indiana at 12. Mike Locksley at Maryland, number 13. Chris Ash at Rutgers, number 14. Outside of Day, who just gets hammered in these rankings because he doesn't have that much head coaching experience. Mike Locksley, obviously another newcomer at Maryland. I don't have a lot of gripes with that. I do think the roster of overall coaching talent in the Big Ten, it's been elevated. And you need to start seeing results from Scott Frost. You need to start seeing results from even more so from Jeff Brom to get Purdue up another level. PJ Fleck is rowing the boat. And not really getting very far.
Did I miss you say something about your favorite coach in the Big Ten?
Pat Fitzgerald.
Uh-huh.
He's appropriately ranked on this one.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of credit, too, because they're working on a different with a different set of obstacles. And I respect that. But I won't really buy into Pat Fitzgerald being ranked ahead of Harbaugh or D'Antonio or Franklin. In this case, he wasn't.
Right.
So who would your number one be?
I mean, at this point, you know, and like you said, you look at the totality of the Big Ten, like it'd be hard to put Harbaugh up there. But
it's frankly hard to put any of them up
there. That's exactly what I was going to say is that, you know, each of them has a fatal flaw. I mean, I guess it would be D'Antonio just based on legacy at this point. But, you know, I'd have Day in that conversation. The thing with James Franklin, again, what makes it hard to put him at the top of that list is his record against Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. And it's well known at this point. And after, especially after coming off of last season, a 9-4 year that, you know, even in the games you won against inferior competition, you'd never felt like Penn State really took those games by, you know, force. You never, you know, we're never going to know what Penn State would have been able to do if Trace McSorley was healthy all year long. We're never going to be able to know if things change, if, you know, they do something else on 4th and 5 against Ohio State. We're just not going to know the answers to those things. So what we do know is that, you know, James Franklin has had some really high, like any coach, he's had some really big high points and some low lights. So, you know, it's a big year for him here, though, and to go into, you know, he's going to have to earn that top spot this season because it is by no means an easy schedule, and it is by no means, you know, a walkover of a start to the Big Ten slate when you go down to Maryland that Friday night game at the end of the month. So you're going to have a few weeks to get your boys ready to go and get them fired up and yeah, get them through the early growing pains that you're going to have between a new quarterback, a new left tackle, and a lot of new guys, a lot of different faces. You have time to get them fired up early, but you know, it's gonna earn his money this year, no question.
Speaking of coaches at Penn State, what were some of your takeaways as you met with some of the assistants? You heard from James Franklin on Tommy Stevens and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of tried to, you know, shine a spotlight on some areas besides football just to figure out what these guys are like. I mean, do we really need more talk about the fourth string tackle back? You know, there's just some point, you know, I don't need to hear any more about the development of guys at defensive end or whatever. You know, I thought Matt Limegrover was interesting talking about recruiting and just how the decommitments, you know, are taken from a coaching standpoint. Jaywan Sider was talking about how, you know, one of the big things he pushed when he got to Penn State was we got to keep recruiting guys until the ink is dry, until their national labor intent was in. I thought that was pretty interesting. And then, you know, Sean Spencer, right, driving around. Just imagine that guy driving around a Harley Davidson, which he's doing now because one of his friends came over at one and it was really loud and really cool. And he's like, "Hey, I want to try that." So he did. And he has a bike now. And he said there were some kids waving to him in the neighborhood recently. And he was too afraid to take his hand off the handlebar. So he didn't
wave
back. Now
they think he's the biggest jerk alive.
Yeah, right. So I thought that was good. You know, it's always good to catch up with Brent Pry. Just such an insightful interview. And, you know, he obviously loves his defense this year with good reason, but he was very blunt about the fact that their run defense was a struggle in 2018, and it has to be better this year, and that starts with the defensive tackles. And, you know, Sean Spencer has a tremendous track record of developing guys. Again, there's a lot of talent in that room and probably more questions than answers too.
But you started to get some of them. A lot of the answers are going to come in August. Football is just around the corner. It's good to catch up with the assistants this week. We've got one more segment to go here. Ask Greg is coming up right after this.
It's time to get undomesticated. It's time for Labatt Blue. Time to get off the couch and on the beach, on the trails, on the lake, onto what you love doing best. Get in touch with your adventurous side. Get out the ATV, the tent, the sunscreen. Get out the cooler and fill it high with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because nothing goes better with the great outdoors. It's time to get up, get out, get undomesticated. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today. Hey, Dustin Hawkinsmith here from the Keystone Sports Network. I wanted to share my own firsthand experience using 409 tailgate sauce. It's a product you hear about often on the Keystone Kickoff Show. This is not an advertisement. It is a fact. 409 tailgate sauce is different from every barbecue sauce I have ever bought. It's not that thick, syrupy, artificial stuff you'll find on grocery store shelves. It's lighter, it's more versatile, and it's good on just about everything. I'd recommend going to 409tailgateclub.com right now. See what I mean, experience that difference, and tailgate with honor.